Good afternoon. This is the Chorus Call conference operator. Welcome, and thank you for joining the Cementir Holding 2020 preliminary consolidated results and industrial plan update conference call. As a reminder, all participants are in listen-only mode. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. Should anyone need assistance during the conference call, they may signal an operator by pressing star and zero on their telephone. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Marco Maria Bianconi, Head of M&A and Investor Relations. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon and good morning to everybody, and welcome to Cementir Holding results release and industrial plan update. This is Marco Bianconi speaking. On behalf of Francesco Caltagirone, I have to send his apologies as he's unwell and he could not attend this call. I'm happy to take questions at the end. I'm sure there will be shortly another opportunity for each one of you to ask questions to him directly. Moving to the deck we've just released onto page four, to the preliminary 2020 results highlights slide. Just a few key highlights. Revenues were up by 1.1% in 2020 to 1.2 billion, which is a historical record. Cement volumes were up 13%, thanks to a 39% increase in clinker and cement volumes in Turkey. EBITDA was unchanged during the year, including a 0.6 million net one-off positive impact. If we look at the recurring EBITDA, it was up 2.2% year-over-year, taking into account the 6.4 million extraordinary land revaluation in 2019. These results was led by good performance in Nordic and Baltic, Turkey, Egypt, and China, lower EBITDA in Belgium, U.S., and Malaysia. There was a progressive improvement in Turkey and a stabilization of the currency. Net financial position was better than expected, to 122.2 million euro, and in the last 12 months, it declined by 117.4 million. Include the IFRS 16 impact, it was 118.8 million better. This includes 10 million one-off due to share buyback and the antitrust fine for Cementir Italia back in 2016. Okay, moving to the next slide. On page five, there is a detail of the quarterly performance in EBITDA and the net financial position. Overall, the COVID-19 impact hit EBITDA by around 20 million over the year. As you know, we undertook a number of actions to preserve profitability and cash, and some CapEx deferral measure to contain cash outflow and costs. Overall, cash generation was better than forecast, as mentioned before. Moving to the next slide, number six, you can see that overall EBIT was up 3.6%. Recurring EBITDA, as I said, was up 2.2%, despite the difficult macro context. There was a very good performance from an industrial standpoint with gray and white cement volumes up 12.9%, ready-mix up 7.8%, and aggregates down slightly 1.8% over the year. We'd like also, given the update of the industrial plan, we have a full year guidance. We expect for 2021 revenues in the range of around 1.3 billion and EBITDA between 285 million and 295 million, net debt around 30 million, and CapEx of 95 million. I will shed more light on the details afterwards. Now let's move to the industrial plan. I will try to be quick. Page nine, just a few words about the main priority, which remain unchanged from previous plan. We want to keep our white cement global leadership, focusing on high value-added solutions with the launch of FutureCEM. We want to invest in innovation and improve profitability and operating efficiency, continue to pursue product and geographic diversification, and leverage on our uniquely vertically integrated platforms in the Nordics, in Belgium, and in Turkey. Moving to page 10, a few highlights about the key industrial initiatives during the Industrial Plan 2021-2023. In the Nordic and Baltic, we expect some infrastructure and commercial projects to underpin volume growth. We have a natural gas pipeline to invest in and a multi-burner for wet kilns in 2022. In Belgium, we are adding to the capacity of aggregates and improving our ready-mix footprint. In Turkey, we'd like to improve our ready-mix competitive position with some plants opening. In Izmir, we are opening a new line of aggregates in Turkey. In Malaysia, you know that from Malaysia, we serve Australia, which is a market where we're number one worldwide in white cement, and we want to increase our commercial presence there. In China, we aim at increasing clinker production capacity by about 10%. I'd like to stress our commitment to sustainability, slide 11. We started this journey in 2019 with a new organizational setup and a sustainability governance in order to move from a simple mandatory reporting to a voluntary disclosure. We established this sustainability committee. We committed to a reduction in CO2 emission targets by 2030 by 30%. And we have specific targets in the industrial plan, and we defined clearly a detailed action plan for each subsidiary. Recently, in December of last year, we've been upgraded to B rating from F by CDP, which is the most important rating agency in this field. Moving to page 12. Again, on the 30% CO2 reduction targets, which are unchanged from previous plan, you can see from the slide that we have a reduction path that would start with a 6% reduction, increasing to 20% in gray cement. In white cement, we'll immediately start with 26% reduction, getting to a 35% reduction in 2030. You have here the target also to reach a gray cement emission by ton of 500 kilograms by 2030. It's important to stress that in the new taxonomy regulation, white cement is not included, and we expect the new regulation to actually be applied, released by Q2 of this year. On the right side of this slide, you can see the focus areas. We are aiming at low carbon cement, as you know, with FutureCem. We are improving our process efficiency using more alternative materials, increasing alternative fuel over 70% in gray cement. And we are investing heavily in sustainability with windmills, with the production of FutureCem, with calcination plants, with kiln upgrades, everything targeted to a better and more sustainable industrial footprint. On page 13, there is a detail of the single initiatives. I'm not going to dwell on the details, but just to give you an idea, we clearly have very clear and identified path for each target with action plans and individual management targets for each one of the actions you can see on the right hand side of the slide for both gray and white cement. Moving to page 14, a few words about FutureCem, which is one of the key pillars of our sustainability path. It is a proprietary technology which is patented worldwide, which enables a 40% clinker reduction in cement production and would yield around a 30% CO2 reduction overall. This would allow us to produce a greener and more sustainable concrete. And we are aiming at commercializing this product starting from this year. And clearly, it is a fully acknowledged solution for clinker ratio reductions by the International Energy Agency. Moving to page 15, product innovation. This is another key pillar of our industrial plan. We are investing heavily in high value added solutions. You can see here three product families: high performance premix, Alber Extreme, high performance ready to use mortar, Alber XL, and ready to use mortar allowing 3D printing, which is Aalborg Explore. Page 16, digitalization. As many of you know, we are investing heavily in this new technology. We aim at achieving around 15 million euro of savings run rate by 2023 from digitalization. The focus areas are future-ready production, smart maintenance, and streamlined supply chain. On page 17, I think it's a useful slide to give you an idea of the CapEx and the investment plan. As you know, we've upped our overall CapEx during the plan from 100 to 107 million in green investments. These investments should yield around 30 million of cost savings from 2023 onwards. You have here on the right side of the slide a breakdown by category, the sustainability, the digitalization, and the maintenance and expansion CapEx over the time span of the plan. And you see here some of the main initiatives, such as the kiln upgrade in Belgium, district heating in Aalborg, future SAM, windmills, and natural gas. Page 18, financial targets for 2023. Again, it's a bit down the road, but it's important to give you a perspective. What we expect by 2023 is sales of around 1.47 billion euro, EBITDA in the range of around 340 million. Again, 30 million should be contributed by green capex. We are including in this forecast fuels and electricity increase ahead of inflation in constant currency. We, as you know, have free CO2 allowances until the end of 2021. From then, we have to purchase around 600,000 tons of CO2 per year, which are in the plan at 30 euro per ton. The EBITDA margin should improve by a few basis points, thanks to digitalization, sustainability, CapEx, and cost control. The yearly maintenance CapEx should be around 66 million, with a CapEx to sales ratio of around 4 to 6%. As said before, the three-year cumulative green capex is 107 million, and we expect to reach by 2023 a net cash position in the range of 100, 250 million euro. Just a few words about the difference with the previous plan on slide 19. You can see, I think the most important point here is to underline the acceleration in the growth rate of sales that from 3% go to 6.3%, that's twice as much, and the acceleration also on the EBITDA growth over the three-year plan. The EBITDA margin remains broadly the same, the average yearly capex as well, and the cumulative green capex is slightly higher. We wanted also to be more precise on the objective for net cash at the end of the plan. Last slide, page 20, growth drivers of EBITDA, just to summarize, starting from EBITDA of 2020 to 64, you see the bridge, the 30 million between digitalization and sustainability capex, and then organic growth, cumulative 46 million, to reach our target of 340. This ends my presentation, and I'm happy to take your questions.
Excuse me, this is the Chorus Call conference operator. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. To remove yourself from the question queue, please press star and two. Please pick up the receiver when asking questions. Anyone who has a question may press star and one at this time. The first question is from Emanuele Gallazzi with Equita. Please go ahead, sir.
Yes, good afternoon, everybody. A couple of questions from my side. The first one is on the business plan. If you can just give us some indication on the main assumption behind the plan in terms of both volumes and pricing, and clearly on your expectation for the Turkish market. Then the second one is looking at your target for net cash in 2023. Can you comment on your dividend policy? Because while reading the press release, you mentioned flat dividend assumed in the business plan. If I may, on the M&A side, if you can just give us some color on your strategy. Thank you.
Thank you, Emanuele. Yes, I start with the first question. Yes, in terms of volumes, I mean, the main assumption, I try to be as granular as I can be at this stage, because you know we're gonna release the full year results on the ninth of March. At this stage, I can tell you that we expect overall, you know, cement and clinker volumes to grow in the low single digits year-over-year. Clearly there will be differences between different regions. Can be more precise in a few weeks' time, but there are more mature regions, as you may imagine, where this growth is at the low end of this range, and regions where the growth is a bit higher, and I'm talking about clearly Turkey, Egypt, Malaysia, and China. Overall, you know, for the group, we're talking about this amount. You're talking less than 5% growth in cement and clinker volumes. In terms of aggregates, there is a significant step up in the growth, especially in the first year, because of the new business line that we have announced to open in Turkey. It would be a step up, and then a growth of low single digit as well in aggregates, because as you know, besides Turkey, the business is concentrated mainly in Belgium and a smaller business in Scandinavia. In ready-mix, the picture is pretty much the same. It tends to be a bit of a higher octane business compared to cement in the upside and in the downside. With the, you know, low single digit growth in cement and clinker, ready-mix should be slightly higher than that. This is overall in terms of volumes. Prices, as we said in the press release, we expect them to be in line with major market trends. It's nothing, you know, spectacular. Clearly, we know we have to recover some of the CO2 that we have to buy. We said in the presentation, in the press release, that we expect some moderate price increases to recover this CO2 shortfall. In terms of major input costs, as you know, energy, thermal energy in particular, is a big element, both electricity and thermal energy. We expect, as indicated in slide 18, that both fuels and electricity will increase ahead of inflation in constant currency. This means that, depending on the region where you're forecasting, clearly, if you see a big devaluation of the currency, you know, there might be a growth that is ahead of what we're seeing. Overall, in constant currency, this area should grow a bit ahead of inflation. On the other side, we will counterbalance that with a usual cost containment. We're very closely monitoring all costs, and so we expect that also the investment efficiency will offset the energy cost, and so the margin should gradually increase, both because of that and operational leverage. It's important to underline that the CO2 cost is included in the plan assumption at 30 euro per ton. This pretty much gives you the picture. I cannot honestly add more at this stage. In terms, the second question was dividends. Yes, I confirm that in the plan, dividends are assumed to be flat year-over-year. This is the indication at this stage. You know, this is something that has to be put to shareholders, but the board decision has to was today to keep dividends unchanged. Clearly, you know very well that the company is very cash generative in the past, and the strategy of the company has always been to reinvest more profitably with a high return within the business. Therefore, clearly, M&A has played a big role. You know that in the last three, four years, we've significantly overhauled the portfolio by exiting Italy, getting the majority in the U.S., swapping Italy with Belgium, and so we've done a number of things. Clearly, we know that a balance sheet with net cash is somewhat inefficient from a financial standpoint. I'm sure that either it's gonna be an M&A at some point, if and when the opportunity will arise, or there's gonna be a consideration regarding the dividend if this is not gonna be achieved. I trust that there will be opportunities to grow, because this is the objective of the company. I cannot say more about M&A at this stage.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Marco.
Sure. Thank you.
The next question is from Matteo Bonizzoni with Kepler. Please go ahead, sir.
Okay, thanks and good evening. So the first question is on the free cash flow and the use of cash. Basically, from a rough calculation, assuming flat dividends, you are going to generate per year over 150 million in 2021-23. So a lot of cash, okay, no dividend increase. What about, for example, greenfield initiatives? There are no greenfield initiatives in this plan. In the past, you elaborated on a potential expansion in white cement via greenfield initiatives in Southeast Asia. I mean, is still in your plan? Should we expect these to be announced next year or at a later stage? The second question is on, I was seeing the alternative fuel percentage use in gray cement versus white cement, very different. Just to know why, technically, I think there are some technical issues also which to justify the fact that the alternative fuel in white cement is going to remain so low. Can you just clarify the reasons for the big delta between white and gray cement? And if I may, the third and last question, you are not providing a quantitative EBITDA indication on by country for 2023, which is the terminal year of your plan. We see this around 8-9% EBITDA CAGR. As regards Turkey, starting from a very low level, can I ask you around the range of EBITDA which you are factoring in 2023? Thanks.
Thank you, Matteo, for the questions. So let me start with the first one. On cash, yes, you're right. I mean, clearly, if we don't up the dividend, the cash generation is going to be significant. And I can only reiterate what I said in the previous question. We are relatively confident, given the track record, that we would be able to find suitable ways to reinvest this cash profitably for shareholders in the core business. If this is not the case, I'm sure the board of directors will then submit to shareholders some alternatives as with regards to dividends. I mean, there are different ways to return cash. But, I mean, the industrial plan, the way that we tend to draft it is at constant perimeter, because it's always very difficult unless there is already something like a greenfield committed capital, you know, to highlight what could be lines of external growth. So the plan is at constant perimeter, and it's it tries to give you an idea of what we can extract from the assets we own today. Any M&A is going to be on top. And going to then your second question regarding the greenfield, you are right. We've been in the past hinting at the possibility of investing in a greenfield in white cement in Asia, especially in China, in southern China, because China is a very interesting area of the world. It's growing fast, is the largest market worldwide for white cement, not only for gray, and southern China is going to be the frontier for the next, say, 20 years for the country. Having said this, as you know, white cement plants are not easy to find. And so it's we are considering the possibility of a greenfield. It's not always easy to find suitable limestone reserves of the quality necessary to grant the level of Hunter scales of whiteness and white cement that our clients in China are used to. And so this is why it's taking a bit long to find the suitable opportunity. This is also the reason why we have not included and we're not disclosed any formal project in this regard, because we're still looking. It is an area of strategic interest, but we've not yet found anything tangible to share with our shareholders. In white cement, definitely the greenfield route is the route, because there are no, you know, say, entity targets that realistically we can look at. With regards to your question on the alternative fuels, you're absolutely right. There is a difference between gray and white, and the difference is it's very simple. White cement is a niche product, as you know, that has specific feature. A key feature of white cement is the consistency of color and chemical and physical characteristics for our suppliers, which tend to be the large dry mix companies worldwide. This is a plus because once you enter into the recipe of dry mix companies, there are high switching barriers, but there is also there are constraints in terms of the characteristics of the product and the consistency of the product. So burning alternative fuels, we have to be very careful because it can damage the whiteness of the product. This is why we cannot use the same percentage of alternative fuels for white as opposed to gray. Gray cement is a different story. It's sold in a different manner, in bulk, and it lends itself much better to this alternative fuel thing. So this is the reason, and so I would not expect the bridge between white and gray cement alternative fuel usage to close. There are different areas where you can work on. You can work on alternative raw materials, you can work on the process, you can work on a number of other things, but not on this because it could prejudice the quality of the wetness. With regards to the question on Turkey, clearly I think it's very important to stress that this is the swing factor, especially in Q3 and Q4 of 2020 results. And it is also one of the key drivers, as we said in the presentation, of our EBITDA progression. I have to bring you back to the old days when the company used to make anywhere between 20 and 30 million euro of EBITDA year in, year out, with a peak of over 80 million. Clearly, there has been a big devaluation 2 years ago, so you have to translate that in current currency. But still, I mean, we managed to turn back into profit towards the end of last year, and we expect this progression to continue in 21, 2, and 3. So clearly, I'm not saying that we will go back to the historical norm, but our expectation is that if, and I have to make a big if, the macroeconomic scenario in Turkey continues to be the one that we're seeing in these last few months, we are confident that we can go back to a decent level of profitability. And you can look at our historical track record on our website, and I'm sure you have all your numbers to see what we can do. So clearly it's a big if because you know that the country has been volatile in the past, especially in terms of currency. But today we see the currency going in the right direction, and we see also volumes and prices going in the right direction. I hope it will last. This is what I can say today.
Thank you.
Sure.
The next question is from Bruno Permutti with Intesa Sanpaolo. Please go ahead, sir.
Yes, good evening. A follow-up on Turkey. It was impressive the volumes recovery you had in 2020. So, if I'm not wrong, starting from capacity utilization around 50%, now you could be around 70%. I'd like to know if this is correct or not. And how much is the export in the contribution to the growth registered in 2020? And looking at the future, you believe that Turkey will continue to be a growth driver in terms of volumes, also in the plan you outline. And so, what is the target of production capacity utilization you're looking at for the country? Then. If you can give us also an idea of how the 2021 started, has started. So if you see what are you seeing on the market, above all in terms of the potential impact of COVID-19? So what are you seeing in your market in terms of starting at the start of this year? And the last one regards the investment in digitalization. If I'm not wrong, looking at your slide, it seems that you will have most of the benefits in 2021. So the 15 million benefits in terms of cost savings should reach, if I'm not wrong, 75% in 2021. So I would like to understand better why the impact is so concentrated, and if you can give us some example of cost savings you are factoring in.
Thank you, Bruno, for your questions. Yes, on the first one of capacity utilization, you're right. We're north of 70% utilization. That's correct. There's been a big swing in volumes in Turkey. And answering also another question of yours with regards to the backdrop and the outlook, I mean, what we can say about Turkey is we already gave some flavor during Q3 results a few months ago. Definitely there was a big upswing and recovery after the COVID pandemic during 2020. And for probably a temporary phenomenon, a number of traditional export markets, like West Africa, for example, where the Turkish exports tend to go usually, have been significantly short of clinker. So lots of export have been sucked more and more by a number of countries like Africa, and that has been the period, and still is, where there is broadly a shortage of cement of products in Turkey, which is very good because you know that there is a structural overcapacity in the country, and so it is probably has to do with some mismatch between production and mothball capacity during the COVID pandemic, etc. But the backdrop is very favorable, and as hinted before, volumes and prices are moving in the right direction because of this. And I have to say, overall, we think that if the macroeconomic condition continue to be supportive, there could be a period in which real investment and building materials demand in this country could continue to grow. We have slack capacity, as you know, we have over 5 million tons of installed capacity. In the plan, we expect volumes in Turkey, to grow. The big swing has been in Q3 and Q4 of this year, but it will continue to grow in 21, 22, and 23, with a recovery in pricing. You know, the prices in Turkey, average prices, are among the lowest in the Western Hemisphere. And so I think there is margin to catch up also because in real terms, they are very low. So I think that there are supportive conditions for a profitability upswing in this country. And clearly this is reflected in our figures. The COVID-19, today I can tell you that January, I mean, it's early, I mean, I can give you just a flavor, but it seems that the situation and the trading is as expected. So we do not see particular pressure or dead cat bounces or things like that because of COVID in the main geographies. And you know very well that we're going towards a couple of quarters when the comparables are going to get easier because of what occurred last year. So we don't know how long this will continue, but I have to say, so far, so good in terms of trading. Digitalization, you are right. If you look at slide 16, it's absolutely correct, your interpretation that the bulk of the profit, the savings run rate will be achieved during 2021. And I would say these are the low-hanging fruits that we are getting from this investment. I mean, broadly speaking, it's not rocket science. It's going towards lean manufacturing. You know that we've invested in the past quite a lot in Lean Six Sigma and statistical methods to reduce waste and get more efficient in production. We are increasingly using automation and technology to do that. This is particularly true in manufacturing with regards to monitoring, to predictive maintenance, which is an important OPEX of ours. And this is one of the major sources of savings. So smart maintenance, what we call smart maintenance, the reduction of downtime, the optimization of kiln performance, which would then yield a better kiln utilization, a better capacity utilization, and therefore better margins overall. This is clearly reflective of one of the investments we're doing. The other big area is supply chain, because sometimes we concentrate too much on the manufacturing as manufacturing companies, but supply chain is a key element of our value chain. And smart logistics based on real-time information is quite important, and it's quite important also the use of technology for quotation and request for proposal process to shorten lead times, to for procurement and all these kind of things. So the reason is that digitalization started earlier. It's made of a number of smaller initiatives and smaller investments that are done singularly at each plant and in each division. Whereas sustainability, it has to do with a longer lead times and slightly bigger investment that would take a bit longer to achieve. This is the reason, I say, of a different timing impact of the two. I hope to have answered your questions.
Yes, thank you. If I may steal a last one, not regarding the CO2 rights, you are budgeting 600,000 tons at 30 euro per ton. What I was asking is more or less, if I'm not wrong, the 30 euro per ton is around the current price. Should there be an increase in the prices? You are confident that you will be able to translate on the cement price, or we should consider a possible sensitivity to this 30 euro per ton?
Yes, thank you, Bruno. You're right. 30 euro is the price that we use internally when we do any opportunity cost analysis and internal project return rates, and it's clearly the price at which CO2 emissions were quoting at the time of the plan was drafted and released. If I'm not wrong, today it's slightly higher than 30, and we clearly don't know where these CO2 emissions prices are going to go. But I think it's better, rather than give you a monetary value like we have done in the past, that it makes your life easier and is clearly for investors to know what is the actual tons shortage we have, so then you can look at the price and understand what is the monetary impact in our P&L. Having said that, as you correctly pointed out, cement is a peculiar industry. It tends to account for only 3% of our overall construction cost. I'm not saying that demand price is inelastic, which could not be for a commodity, but it's also true that given the volumes you're talking about, a small price increase can recover quite a significant amount in terms of CO2. So what we are forecasting and assuming in the plan, and please take this with a degree of caution, because any plan has a number of assumptions that have then to be proved correct as life goes on. We have assumed that this shortage of 600,000 tons per year will be fully covered by price increases in different markets. So this is already incorporated in the figures.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
The next question is from Alessandro Tortora with Mediobanca. Please go ahead, sir.
Okay, good evening to everybody. I have four questions, if I may. The first one, if you can come back to the point you mentioned before on CO2. You mentioned the 600,000 shortage of tons you have. Can you tell me which is the country that is generating the bulk of these, let's say, deficit? And why are you so confident, considering also that we have the incoming, let's say, ETS revision, and that probably we are going, through a much more stringent emission trading system? So the question is, if you, let's say, I understood your confidence, but just understand where you, let's say, the country generating the deficit, and why you are so confident, let's say, to pass through this cost increase, because this is probably also a difference I got compared to the previous business plan.
Thank you, Alessandro. Absolutely. Thank you for your question. Let's say the confidence is given what is the current outlook and what we know with regards to discussion, what the draft circulated within professional bodies, etc., of what the scenarios are for legislation. As we stated in the presentation, we expect by the end of Q2 of this year the official regulation to be released, and at that time we clearly will have to see what the actual caps and system and mechanism will be. What we can say is that, and this is public information, if you go on the European Commission's website, there is a detail of the emissions by plant for all European manufacturers, but I think it's quite intuitive to think that the emissions are concentrated in the areas where we have the biggest concentration of capacity, meaning in Europe, you're talking about Belgium and you're talking about Denmark, because Turkey, as you know, is outside this scheme. So this is the scenario. Clearly, when you have to draft a plan in our industry, given that we have every 5 years, as you know, new releases and a legislation that's clearly going towards a certain direction in CO2 and in environmental sustainability, we are clearly have to try to plan with what we know. And so we try to give the best picture possible given the current knowledge of events. But absolutely, you're right. We have to wait the end of Q2 or when the European Commission will release the official legislation to be absolutely certain about the legislative framework. But the 600,000 are based on the historical production and what our assumptions are of the cap mechanism central scenario. Let's put it this way.
Okay. And just to complete the picture on the regulation side, let's say you're not assuming any different change because there is also this discussion on carbon border and therefore any implication in case they put this new scheme on, for instance, Turkey?
Absolutely. We have not included in the plan any specific impact of a carbon border tax. I mean, this clearly is a big area, and it's a very interesting area. I think there are serious challenges in the implementation front for a number of reasons, not only for cement, for a number of other products which incorporate a certain element of carbon. But having said that, clearly in our footprint, if you look at our capacity, we have a very big capacity in outside Europe in terms of gray cement and also in white cement. So we have to see what the net impact is going to be. because we could be benefit on one side and maybe being hit on the other, but net-net, we don't think we're going to be significantly worse off. So let's say we have, let's put it this way, a natural hedge by having a portfolio with the capacity that it's both within Europe and outside Europe, but we have to wait and see what the legislator will provide us with.
Then, let's say the last two questions were, the first one is on the working capital, because if understood in the press release, you also mentioned a very good control on this side. So if you can, let's say, give me an idea of which level of working capital on sales you consider sustainable going forward, because I guess also the result on the net debt for this year has been, let's say, helped by this management. And the last question is on the cost savings you mentioned. I understood the around 15 million from this digitalization at full speed. With regard to the green, let's say, CapEx and sustainability cost savings, it's 15 by 2030. I also read 30 million. So just understanding, the total is 30 or 45 at full speed. Thanks.
Sure. Okay. On the working capital front, well, what I can tell you is definitely that has been a very, very good performance on this front, which has to do partially also with the digitization effort that we've made with like remote monitoring of inventory levels. So we've managed to actually lower the inventory levels in a number of plants, and this clearly has improved this element of the working capital. In terms of receivables and payables as well, I think we're stretching, definitely the situation, because, you know, we are paying, receivable days and payables days have been going in the right direction for quite some time. So I believe that the easy results have been reached in the last couple of years. So I would not expect working capital to be a significant source of cash flow income going forward. So I would probably model for a modest working capital absorption in line with the expected growth, but no big absorption, but not even a release of working capital. So usual, I would say, standards with nothing, no exceptional issues that we expect going forward. In terms of the other question, there was, I don't remember, what was the other question, Alessandro?
It was on the total amount of savings, because
the total amount of savings is definitely, as you can see on the bridge, is 30 million, 30, and of which 15 million from digitization. And as commented before, digitization is going to come a bit earlier in terms of the plan. And then another 15 million run rates from 2023 from the sustainability effort. So overall, if you look at the investment of 107 million, we expect from 2023 onwards, these 107 million to yield around 30 million of EBITDA impact.
Okay, thanks.
Sure.
The next question is from Daniele Alibrandi with Stifel. Please go ahead, sir.
Yes, hello everybody, and thanks for taking my question. I have actually three. My first one is what energy cost assumption you have made for 2021, and the other one relates to getting a little bit of sense of what's happening in the different geographies. So Denmark, we've seen a quick rebound from COVID situation. So how do you see the year in front of us, and what about also Nordics? On the contrary, Belgium, what about this country? It seems that have been hit a little bit harder in the second latest lockdown. And my final question, what's happening in the US with the white cement prices, given that we've seen the gray cement prices actually increasing by $8 per ton at the beginning of the year. So just to have a sense on what is happening on the white part. Thanks.
Thank you, Daniele. Thank you for your question. So starting with not in impact in order, but I'll try to remember. So energy, on the energy front, I mean, as much as I can be specific at this stage, we will definitely be more specific on the 9th of March. I can tell you that energy in the plan is expected to grow ahead of inflation. So that means that compared to our cost base, energy is going to grow a bit faster. As I tried to get across before, we have a number of countermeasures to offset the cost of energy. I mean, this is clearly a cautionary, I would say, prediction, because we operate also in a number of emerging countries where this energy is quoted in dollars. And overall, as probably happened to talk with some of you, as a group, we tend to benefit slightly when the dollar declines. We are so short dollars overall because we tend to buy energy and input costs in dollars. But overall, in constant currency, so this is important, constant currency, we expect thermal energy and electricity to grow ahead of inflation in the different countries. So as you know, we have not provided, and we can discuss this on the 9th of March or later, country by country, but as a group, for the group as a whole, this is the picture. We clearly have some hedges in place, and overall, with the hedges, a slight growth ahead of inflation is what we expect. This is the first question. With regards to Denmark, the question on Denmark, clearly this is one of the most important countries where we operate in, and I know some of you have been looking at the Danish market. We know that, especially in the last few quarters, there has been a bit of a slowdown on the housing side. But overall, I think the country is, trading in the country is good, is as expected. No particular changes or things to report at this stage. And clearly, being a very big player, as you know, in this country, we can benefit from the fact that we're exposed to very different sectors. So not only residential, that is a big driver, but also to commercial and infrastructure, which are very big drivers of gray cement consumption as well. So we expect during the plan a number of projects to materialize and crystallize. It's a bit early days to discuss them at this stage. But we're confident that although being a mature market and clearly growth is not spectacular, and it's been growing for quite some time now, we still expect further growth, mainly driven by those infrastructure and commercial projects from a volume terms, and a number of initiatives in the sustainability front, from district heating to a number of other things we're doing with windmills, electricity, renewable energy, etc., to drive profits going forward. With regards to Belgium, that's other big contributor to our profits. As you know, here we have two big areas. One is cement and ready mix, and the other one is aggregates. And on both, we expect growth going forward. In cement, a bit more than in aggregates, mainly because it suffered a bit more during the pandemic, and we expect it to rebound. We also have a number of initiatives in terms of efficiency and thermal energy improvement in the kiln. So a part of the EBITDA progression there will come from those initiatives and this CapEx. Aggregates is kind of a steady state. We don't expect particular changes. It's a relatively mature and good business, and we don't see a particular difference or change in this trend. With white cement, it is a worldwide business, and it tends to be sold in smaller quantities and to different countries. So we reach over 80 countries worldwide. We sell 10, 15, 5, 30,000 tons here and there. So it's very difficult to provide you the granularity that you would need to model maybe pricing on a country by country basis. What I can tell you is that there is a one big thing that as you know very well, freight rates have shot up significantly recently. So a number of exports, especially from emerging countries, I'm talking about imports for us, competitor white cement, is becoming more and more costly because of freight. So you have to, bear in mind that the dynamics of logistics when you talk about white cement, because that's a big component of the end cost. Overall, in our main markets, so domestic markets, talking about continental Europe, Nordic Europe, we see prices in line with relevant market trends. No big increases, but relatively stable, put it this way. Same in America, although clearly in America, as you know, it has suffered in the past from imports from exporting countries because of a domestic higher average pricing compared to other parts of the world. But I have to say, if freight continue to be at this level, maybe things will change going forward. We have to see what happens to freight rates. But overall, I would say there is no significant change in white cement price dynamics in the next few years compared to what happened in the recent past.
Thanks.
I hope I've answered your questions, Daniele. If you have any other...
No, it's okay. Thanks very much. Very helpful.
Thank you.
The next question is from Michele Baldelli with Exane BNP Paribas. Please go ahead, sir.
Hi, good evening to everybody. I have three questions. Two are all related to the plan. So basically, looking to the 2023 targets, my two questions are, first of all, how much of this growth, either of profitability or of top line, is driven by Egypt, Malaysia, or United States? Shall we think about some of these regions growing more than the group, or they are in line with the group or not? The second question still on 2023 targets. Can we say that the capacity utilization rate at that point will be higher than 90%? I don't know if you already mentioned, but it's a curiosity. And then a third question relates on the other side to the current installment of new capacity in Turkey with the new line. Are you, let's say, available to disclose how much capacity can we expect in addition as a percentage to the current, let's say, the historical one, and if this is for the export market, and it is also to which regions, but I don't think that you want to disclose this. Thank you.
Thank you for your questions. So answering them in order, yes, you are absolutely right. We expect in countries like Egypt and Malaysia in particular to provide, together with Turkey, a higher than average growth rate in terms of volumes and then top line and EBITDA compared to the more mature regions. I would say the US is pretty much in line. It's not growing as fast as those other regions. It's kind of in the middle between the most mature and those, say, higher octane countries of our portfolio. So yes. In terms of capacity utilization overall, yes. I mean, as per the previous question, we are now crossing, especially in Turkey, over the 70% mark. And if we continue towards this trajectory, we will go very close overall as a group to not saturate fully, but go close to a very high capacity utilization rate, close to the ones that you mentioned. This is clearly during the plan. And this is also why we are planning and looking at alternatives, and greenfields is one, but we've announced a 10%, for example, capacity increase in clinker production in China. The market is strong, the demand is there. We have a premium product, and we're number one in the Chinese white cement market. We want to keep this lead. And so we see the opportunity, and this is why we're also trying, where possible, to increase our capacity in order not to then be constrained by our capacity limitations. So as far as the new business line, I have to say I cannot provide you at this stage with the exact number on in terms of volumes. That will definitely be something we will release on the 9th of March, when we will also give you granularity on the different areas. What I can tell you is that this business line is important, is a meaningful increase, and we believe that it plays in the hands of our strategy of, you know, having hubs, vertically integrated hubs in the three areas where we produce gray cement with a vertically integrated model. So we do have aggregates, cement, and ready mix in Denmark. We have aggregate, cement, and ready mix in Belgium. Now we will have from this year aggregates, ready mix, and cement in Turkey. We were missing the aggregate bit in Turkey. We believe it is very complementary to the ready mix business, as you know, but it's also a very good business in its own right, as the Belgian operations can testify, if it's it's properly managed and it's co-located in the right region. So we believe that these are features that belong to this investment in the Izmir region, that is a wealthy and very interesting area of Turkey. And I'm sorry, I cannot give you the exact number, but I can just tell you that is a quite significant investment and output.
Thanks very much.
I think actually, now Elisa is telling me, and I forgot, that in the footnote of page 18 in the presentation, we actually say that it's worth around 3.6 million tons per annum. So here you go.
Thank you.
Of page 18. Thank you, Elisa.
The next question is a follow-up from Alessandro Tortora with Mediobanca. Please go ahead, sir.
Thanks again. So the follow-up is, the first one is basically the last question on the aggregates, the 3.6 million ton addition. See something is an addition that we see immediately now in 2021, and what is the reason behind the addition? Is, for instance, I don't know, there is a specific reason behind, for instance, Mirne as a location you choose. And the second question is on, again, the regulation and white cement. Can you explain exactly if white cement is included in, let's say, the mechanism of allowances or not? Because this is a very specific case.
Okay, Alessandro, thank you for your question. The reason why the aggregate business in Turkey is located there is just because you have the bulk of our cement capacity and also the ready mix downstream business located in the Aegean region of Turkey. So it is a matter of really exploiting all the possible synergies with the existing assets that we decided to locate this business in this area. And this is also why we identified very good reserves of the quality that we deem appropriate to serve our clients. So this is the reason. The other thing is, there will be a significant ramp up in 2021 and then a further ramp up in the following years. So it will be, in our plan, it's kind of front ended the ramp up in volume growth. We do not expect a significant ramp up in profits though, because clearly there will be some costs upfront to be incurred. But we do believe that it can be a profitable business line for us. So this is one. And sorry, Alessandro, I could not catch your last question on CO2, I think. Could you repeat the question?
It was related to the white cement and the link of white cement, because I understood that the taxonomy regulation does not apply to white cement. Just understand if the mechanism of, let's say, free allowances is also related to white cement, or is only, let's say, an issue, let's say, for the gray one.
Yeah, this is a very good question, actually. The one thing that I can tell you is that the taxonomy white cement is not included, meaning that there will not be a specific at the moment, at least for what we know. Then you never know, because clearly the legislation is not fully released. It's not included in the taxonomy, and not being included in taxonomy, there are not specific targets on white cement. Having said that, clearly we do have emissions there, and we account them and we include them, and then and it's a cost that we incur also for white cement.
Okay. So let's hope that the regulator on this side is not having this conference call for white cement.
I have to say, Alessandro, we have always to put things in context. I mean, clearly white cement for us is a big business. You know, we have 3.3 million tons of capacity out of 13.1 overall. And so for us, it is a big business, although it's scattered around a number of geographies and a very wide number of clients. But putting things in context of the cement association and the cement market overall, you're talking about the 19, 20 million tons market, as opposed to the 1.5 or, you know, over the billions of gray cement. So the issue concerning CO2 and emissions and legislation is clearly centered and hinging around gray cement, just because of the numbers there around white gray cement. White cement is big for us, but it's very, very small in the context of the scheme of worldwide things. And this is probably why, at this stage, at least as far as we are aware, has not been fully included in the taxonomy.
Okay, very clear. Thanks.
Sure.
Mr. Bianconi, there are no more questions registered at this time.
Thank you very much, everybody, for your interest. And also on behalf of Francesco Caltagirone, I wish you a pleasant rest of the day. And thank you very much for following Chairman Tier.